Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio show. I am Eric Fisher, and right now I'm flying solo, so if you want to call in, please do and ask a question or express your opinion. Be happy to talk to you. Gordon Glantz on assignment today. Ron Ofer will not be with us as well, and Josh Landsberg is not checked in yet. So right now I'm flying solo. But fortunately, there's a lot to talk about this week, always in Philadelphia sports, a lot to talk about. And let's start with the Philadelphia Phillies. They begin spring training this week. Catchers and pitchers report Wednesday. First workout will be Thursday. And my colleague Ron Ofer last week threw the question out there, does anybody care? Is there any anticipation for this season? And as I wrote about in my fish and chips column this week, anticipation probably too strong a word. But at least there's a thought now that the Phillies are moving forward. Phillies are moving forward. They're not moving backwards anymore. They're not looking to the past to recapture their glory days. They're moving forward. They're at least starting over with younger players. Will these players pan out? I don't know. I'm not overly optimistic. The over-under from Vegas, I believe, I saw was 66.5, the first number that came out. That might be a little bit low. The Phillies won 63 games last year. On the other hand, maybe it's not too low. I don't see them winning. I think their upside is something like 75, I think, would be the upside. Since the pitchers and catchers report this week, let's stick with the pitchers and catchers. And the rotation is younger, not completely young. You do have Craig Morton, who they picked up from the Pirates. Charlie Morton, who they picked up from the Pirates. And Charlie is 32 years old, I believe. And, you know, he's the type of guy where, you know, maybe if he has a good first half, they can trade him and get something at the trade deadline for him. But for the most part, the staff's pretty young. And as I mentioned, I'll go through this in my fish and chips column, but you have Aaron Nola, of course, who had a pretty good year last year as a rookie. He's the top guy coming back, I would think, and he's 22 years old. You got Jared Eichhoff, who they're hoping for big things for. He's 25 years old. Vincent Velasquez is 23. Adam Morgan and Brett Oberholzer are 26. So you do have some young guys in there who they hope will develop for the future. I mean, give them a shot. Throw them out there. The bullpen, I don't know. Luis Garcia, Jaymar Gomez, Elvis Arroyo, Hector Neris is back. Daniel Stumpf throw in there. Mario Hollins is back after missing injury. David Hernandez. That's the area where I think you're really looking at some problems is the bullpen. I mean, you don't have Ken Giles. You don't have Jonathan Papelbon. And these were the guys who closed out games last year and did a pretty good job of it. Papelbon, I know everybody wanted out of here, and he was way overpaid. And you don't need a closer on a team that wins 63 games for sure. But they did close out games. I think there's the question this year, even if the starting staff is a little better, and there's no guarantee it will be, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned Jeremy Hellickson. I should have thrown him in there. He's going to be a very reliable starter, I believe. But can't close out games, you know. I don't know if that win total will be that much higher, but I do think the starting staff will be better. I don't think you'll have some of these, and regardless of whether it's better or not, at least there's hope. It's not retreads like Aaron Harang and Jerome Williams, who, you know, I mean, you knew they weren't part of the future. This year for the Phillies, you know, you look and see maybe some of these guys are part of the Phillies' future. Maybe. Are they all going to pan out? Like I said, no. Are they all part of the Phillies' future? No. But at least they've turned the page, and we have something to look at, and go forward with, instead of going back to the past and hoping they recapture 2008. At catcher, since what pitchers and catchers are reporting, you got Cameron Rupp and Carlos Ruiz. Carlos Ruiz back for his final season probably. That is what it is. Like I said, they're not going to turn this thing around in 1 year. Might take a couple years, but. At least they're looking at some different players. At least they're looking at some new players, and they're not just guys who you say, well, that guy's going to be out of here in a year or two anyway. It doesn't matter. Hey, if they lose, at least lose with young players, and maybe, like I said, some of them will develop and pan out. I was going to go around the whole team, but there's so much going on this week. We can save that for next week when we have our panelists back and get closer to the whole team reporting. But like I said, they say spring hope springs eternal. I don't know if that's quite accurate for the Phillies, but at least there's something to look forward to, some interest this year. Maybe not a lot, but at least it's something different. At least you can see what they're trying to do. And I think that's a positive. And so, like I said, am I anticipating the start of Philly season? Am I anticipating spring training? Yeah, a little bit. But I think at least there's some intrigue there and something for people to look forward to and some questions. You know, like I said, which of these guys is going to stick this year? And more importantly, which of these guys could be part of the future? So that's Philly's Thursday. As I wrote in Fish and Chips, I think they had a bigger opportunity with this winter team's not doing so well and the Eagles going over through their makeover. But, you know, it's not quite the golden. They're not taking advantage of the golden opportunity they have in terms of getting fan interest, but maybe some positive things from the Phillies. Speaking of teams that are looking for, maybe have nowhere to go but up, Philadelphia 76ers with their 8 wins at this point, pretty good bet to not go 9-73 and have the worst record for an 82-game season in NBA history. I know the All-Star games tonight. I don't want to talk about the All-Star game. I don't want to talk about the slam dunk contest. I barely want to talk about the Rising Stars Challenge, in which Jahlil Okafor had 13 points and actually made a three-pointer. That, to me, I'm not an All-Star game fan. I don't get excited about it. I will say it was Kobe Bryant playing his last one. That's the only thing that really interests me in the All-Star game tonight. And good for Kobe. Not one of my favorite players, but just a terrific player. In fact, I saw a poll on Philly.com, which asked, I forget how they phrased it, but basically who had a better career or who had better Hall of Fame credentials, Allen Iverson or Kobe Bryant. And that's just a ridiculous question. It's not even close. Kobe Bryant's one of the best players of all time. Allen Iverson, an unbelievably exciting player and a terrific player in what he accomplished, especially given his size. But that's apples and oranges. I mean, Allen Iverson isn't close to the player Kobe Bryant is. Kobe Bryant, when he wanted to be, and until age caught up with him a little bit, was arguably the best defensive player in the league. And he certainly was in the conversation. Certainly no one ever said that about Allen Iverson. So in addition to the offensive end, Kobe just was such a terrific defensive player. And like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Kobe Bryant's, but I have tremendous respect for how great he is. And I don't mean to slight Allen Iverson, but they're not in the same conversation in terms of all-time greats. But let's get to 76ers, because they have a big decision to make this week, and that is the trade deadline is this Thursday. NBA trade deadline this Thursday. And usually some stuff happens at the NBA trade deadline, and the Sixers have been pretty active lately. And I wrote in my Sixers notebook a couple weeks ago, I suggested that they need to trade Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor, need to look at that. You need to think, these guys can't play together. I know it's half a season, a little more than half a season, but their games don't mesh. Nerlens Noel can't make a shot beyond about 6 feet. So he's kind of lost on offense when Okafor's in there, and Okafor's such a terrific scorer. On the other hand, you have at the other end of the court, Okafor's not nearly the defensive player that Noel is. And then it becomes, you know, you have Embiid coming in next year, so how many centers can you have? And if none of them can really play the four and cover guys or score from beyond, you know, certain distance, I know Embiid is a pretty decent shot, but I can't see him playing outside, and I can't see him defending outside. Someone's got to go out there and cover the forwards who are going to be quicker than they are. I think you have a real issue whether these guys can play together, and this has to do with Sam Hinkie constructing the team. But they do have some value, so I think it's worth it for the Sixers to kick the tires and check around the league and see if anybody wants Noel or Okafor and how much you can get back for them. And now there's no rush to do this. The good thing is the Sixers are can negotiate from a position of strength or a position of weakness. But think about it that way. If they have nothing to lose, you know, they lose some more games this year. So what? Helps them in their ping pong competition to get a better draft pick. So the 76ers really should explore which of these guys has the most value and then decide whether to trade them. And like I said, if you don't like what you're getting, then you wait till the draft and maybe trade one of them around draft time. Or summer, you know, then you have the rest of the year to let it play out. Maybe you have a better sense of what Embiid's going to do next year, if he's even going to be there. And you trade Noel or Okafor, or, hey, maybe somebody offers you something for Embiid. Don't think that's likely, but at least not a serious offer that's worth taking. But I do think the Sixers need to look at that. What would really be interesting, though, not a lot of guys in the Sixers have a lot of value. I don't think anybody wants many of their players. One of the really interesting ones would be if a team was interested in Ish Smith. Ish Smith, the Sixers had one win when he got here, and he's made a lot of difference. He certainly plays really well. It's good chemistry with Noel. He did last year. Sixers made a mistake in not bringing him back this year. But certainly they're a better team with Ish Smith back at point guard. But is he really part of your long-term future? And Noel came out this weekend and talked about bringing Ish Smith back for next year and how important that is for the Sixers. But I'm not even looking at next year. What if some team wants a backup point guard and they're intrigued by the possibility of Ish Smith playing backup point guard and they're actually willing to give the Sixers something of value for him? I think the Sixers have to look at that. Now, you don't want to be left without a point guard again. Certainly, it makes them a lot worse. But so what if they're worse this year? You know, they have picks in the draft. They are all kinds of free agents. They can get another point guard, a decent NBA point guard. I don't think Ish Smith, my opinion is, as much as the difference he's made on this team, and he's been terrific in that sense, Ish Smith is not a point guard to me on a winning basketball team. He goes one-on-one too much, especially in crunch time late in the games. Everything's one-on-one. He holds the ball. He does distribute it well during the game, but he just seems to, like I said, if he's making a shot, it's great. But if he's not making a shot, he still keeps shooting. And the Sixers, like I said, when they get good, if they ever get good, Ish Smith's not going to be the starting point guard for this team. So if somebody really needs a, someone in a playoff contention really needs a point guard, I'd be open at trading Ish Smith. I know it won't make a lot of people happy. I know it makes the team worse. I know it won't make Nerlens Noel happy. Maybe you can trade Noel and Ish Smith together somewhere. That's a possibility. They play so well together. But like I said, no one on this team should be untouchable. This team has 8 wins. No one should be untouchable. The only one I would think would be untouchable, I shouldn't say is untouchable, but the only one I would consider putting hands off would be Okafor. And then, like I said, the Sixers really have to decide if it's Okafor or Noel as part of the future, because I'm not sure they both are. And like I said, there's no rush. They need someone to make them a really good deal because they don't need to trade either of these guys, and they don't need to trade Ish Smith either. But like I said, my opinion is just that Ish Smith is not going to be the starting point guard when or if this team ever gets good. And when I say good, I mean over 500 and contending for a playoff spot. So so it could be an interesting week. See if the Sixers stand pat, or if they do pull off a big deal. And like I said, trade deadline's Thursday, and we will get a good sense of that this week. And who knows, a lot of stuff happens. The NBA trade deadline, there's talk of Kevin Love being traded, although LeBron James says that's not going to happen, which is interesting because I thought LeBron made it very clear he's not the GM and doesn't make trades and didn't fire the coach and all that. But that's another topic for another day. This is our first show since the Super Bowl. So I do want to backtrack a little bit to the Super Bowl. We saw that, and I can brag since I'm the only one on here, so nobody can argue with me. But even if the other guys were on with me this week, I'm the only one who picked the Broncos to win, and they did it kind of the way I said they would. They Wade Phillips just did a tremendous job. Defensive coordinator Wade Phillips did a tremendous job designing a defense to counteract Cam Newton and the Panthers' offense. And he did it the week before against Tom Brady, 2 weeks before, I guess, the game before in the AFC Championship game. He confused Tom Brady. And now he comes back and does it to Cam Newton. And what they did is they took away the running game, which is what I suggested they had to do to win, was take away or at least contain the Panthers' running game, which includes Cam Newton, by the way. It's not just Jonathan Stewart. And almost dare him to beat them downfield. And my contention was that the Broncos secondary cover the Panthers receivers one-on-one, and that Cam Newton's not the most accurate thrower in the world either. Even he's the MVP and he deserved the MVP, but he's not the most accurate guy throwing downfield. Hey, if he does and he beats the Broncos, so be it. But they had to take something away, and I would take away the run, which is what the Panthers establish their game behind, and then they throw off of that. That's exactly what the Broncos did. They contained the running game, did a great job containing the running game. Stewart just never got on track. And Cam Newton, with the exception of a couple runs, didn't go crazy, at least running against them. And they made him throw, and they hit him a lot. They were in the pocket. They crashed into him a lot. Even when he wasn't getting sacked, and they did end up with 7 sacks, they were hitting Newton. He was clearly frustrated. His throws were sailing high, even when he did have time to throw. A lot of times he threw high, And like I said, their receivers just aren't good enough to get open against really a terrific Denver defense, Denver secondary. So that's what happened. The Denver defense got two turnovers, and I also stress the importance of the start. The Panthers have gotten off to really fast starts in the playoffs, and then they grind you down with the running game. And then, you know, when you try to protect against the running game, Newton burns you on the pass. What the Broncos did was they got up to an early lead. Peyton Manning, I know he didn't have a great game, but he led them down the field on that first possession. They got a field goal out of it. Then, of course, you had the turnover with the fumble when Von Miller caused the fumble from Cam Newton, and they recover it in the end zone. I believe it was Malik Jackson. It's 10-0. Now the Broncos can play their game. The Broncos can play field position. The Broncos can punt, and they can attack with their defense. And that's what they did. I suggested that was the formula they should try, and that's exactly what they did, and they won the Super Bowl 24-10. And a lot of people were very, very wrong on that pick. It's really remarkable that the Panthers were the best team in terms of the defense causing turnovers, and the Broncos, of course, had so many turnovers during the year with Peyton Manning throwing a ton of interceptions. But as I pointed out as well, Peyton Manning who played the first nine games of the year was not the Peyton Manning that finished the season. And in the playoffs, and even starting with the last game of the regular season when he came off the bench in the third quarter against the Chargers to help the Broncos win and gain a really important home field advantage, without which I'm not sure they would have won the Super Bowl, not sure they would have made it to the Super Bowl. They played two home games against the Steelers and Patriots before getting to the Super Bowl. But anyway, Manning, and I wrote a column about this called Beautiful Mind, and I mentioned it in the Fish and Chips 2 weeks earlier. He really adjusted his game, and he just tried to avoid mistakes. And the only interception he threw during those final 3.5 games that he played, we start with the last game of the regular season, the second half when he came in, he threw one interception, and that was in the Super Bowl. And he didn't throw any others. Contrast that to, I believe he threw 17 in the first nine games of the year. And that's just a horrible number. And I think Peyton Manning realized he couldn't do what he used to do, and he was just going to play it safe, and he wasn't going to try to make throws that he couldn't make anymore. And, you know, he makes quick decisions. He's still smart. He gets rid of the ball. The Broncos set a record, by the way, a Super Bowl record, for 12 straight third down failures. 12 straight third down failures. It's a Super Bowl record for futility, and yet they didn't, you know, like I said, except for the interception he threw, he didn't turn the ball over, and they played field position with Cole Kwik punting, and Brandon McManus, Temple Zone, North Penn High School, and Temple kicker, Brandon McManus, made all three of his field goal attempts, just like he made the five the week before, and the Broncos won the Super Bowl. Perfect formula. Great job by Wade Phillips. Congratulations, Peyton Manning. And a great, great game by Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware as well. But Von Miller was an absolute force in that game. Two and a half sacks, two caused fumbles. One of those fumbles ends up with the Broncos touchdown. The other one turned the ball over inside the 10-yard line. And then the Broncos eventually scored on that possession. Congratulations to Denver Broncos. Glad to see them win it. Glad to see Peyton get win number 200 at his second Super Bowl. And really a great job all around. And I'll leave you with one last thought on the Super Bowl. It's hard to believe that Wade Phillips was out of the league last year, didn't have a coaching job, and Billy Davis was the defensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. That's just hard to believe. And then coming back, they hired Phillips this year. The Eagles could have made that same change. Now, the Broncos have more talent. Phillips had more talent, but he did a great, great job utilizing that talent. And that's why the Broncos are Super Bowl champions, Super Bowl 50 winners. Let's move on. Speaking of football, LeSean McCoy, former Eagles running back, gets into allegedly involved in an altercation, although there is videotape that seems to indicate McCoy was part of this, with off-duty officers at an after-hours club, the Recess Lounge, down in Olden City. The police report says that Coy and his three friends kicked, stomped, punched off-duty police officers, two of whom sustained broken ribs. One guy got a broken nose. They had all kinds of facial cuts and had to go to the hospital for these things. And reports are that it was an argument over ownership of a bottle of champagne. LeSean McCoy, you know, you don't want to jump to conclusions on a guy, but this is not his first incident. This is not LeSean McCoy's first incident. We had the thing with the party bus where he was accused of assaulting the woman, and he and his bodyguard, of humiliating her, of pouring water on her, of, you know, they're horsing around, and they put her on the ground. And then they put her out of the bus on the New Jersey Turnpike and abandoned her. We didn't know who to believe. He said, she said. Then you have the tip, although it's not of the same magnitude, obviously. We have the tip incident where, the $60 bill, and he leaves with a 20-cent tip, was it? Somewhere around there. And then he just says it was because of bad service, and yet the reports were that he and his group were rude throughout the whole meal, and rude to the staff, which I have a personal issue with. I can't stand people who are rude to waiters and waitresses. McCoy's got an issue here. This is more serious than all of those. And like I said, enough of these incidents add up, and you start to believe where there's smoke, there's fire. And, Chip Kelly made a bad trade in only getting Kiko Alonso back for McCoy. But getting McCoy out of here might have been a good move. And this guy might be a time bomb. He's obviously hanging with the wrong people, or maybe it's just him. Don't blame the other people. At this point, LeSean McCoy should take responsibility for himself. And if he's getting involved in these things, and like I said, who knows the stuff we didn't hear about. We don't hear about all this stuff. Just like Jahlil Okafor, if he hadn't had the incident in Boston outside, maybe we never would have heard about the driving 100 miles an hour on the Ben Franklin Bridge or Walt Whitman Bridge, whichever it was. Maybe we don't hear about the incident in Old City, which, by the way, I heard was outside the same recess lounge. Might want to stay out of there if you're a professional athlete. Although obviously they cater to that crowd, but LeSean McCoy, who knows? He might be facing assault charges. He might be facing problems from the NFL, depending on how which way this goes, in terms of being suspended or fined. The Eagles might be better off without LeSean McCoy. And I it doesn't mean the trade was a good trade. Unless Kiko Alonso somehow becomes transforms into a great player in the new 4-3. But LeSean McCoy didn't do himself any favors this weekend, that weekend, and I guess it was last weekend. And like I said, maybe it's a case of we're better off without him. I don't think too many people are going to bemoan the fact that LeSean McCoy is no longer a Philadelphia Eagle. We heard a lot about this year, but we might not hear it so much next year. Let's move on to Philadelphia Flyers. Flyers, well, that was a tough game with the Devils yesterday. They give up two power play goals. Last one in overtime to Adam Henrique, 2:58 in, after Jake Voracek took a hooking penalty. I know some people weren't happy with it, thought it was a marginal call. I thought it was the right call. They could have let it go. I'm not telling you they couldn't have let it go, but it probably was the right call. Certainly if that had happened to a Flyer and somebody put their stick back in through their legs while they were coming in like that, the Flyers fans would have won the penalty. And so, same both ways. Having said that, so it puts the Flyers 5 points behind the Devils. Their games just tougher for them each time. Each time they lose ground to one of the teams they're competing against for that final playoff spot, the Devils are one of those teams. It really sets the Flyers back. It's another team you have to climb over. It's a little further you have to go each time, and at some point you're going to run out of time. They still have 30 games left, but you're going to run out of time. Speaking of which, tonight they play the New York Rangers in what should be, I'll say, a contentious affair. Last weekend when the Flyers played the Rangers, another point they lost, by the way, the Rangers getting a late goal. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Late goal to tie the game, and then the Rangers win it in extra time there. So it's 3-2. Again, I think it was an overtime goal, and that was a shootout. I think the Rangers game was a shootout. I apologize. A shootout. It's another point lost. If the Flyers would have held on at the end of regulation, they get the 2 points. By losing that lead in the I think it was 12 seconds left, 13 seconds left, they get 1 point out of the game, and the Rangers probably can't catch the Rangers, but it's a point lost against all the other teams they're trying to gain on when that late goal sent the game in overtime, and then, of course, they lose in overtime. The Devils were the Flyers behind, and Shane Gostisbehere scores and in the third period, about 3 minutes in, gets the game to overtime, so the Flyers pick up the point even though they lose in overtime. But it's a long season, but you can't keep giving away points, and the Flyers have been giving them away lately. In fact, they haven't played very well lately, or they haven't won many games lately, And I do want to tie that in before I talk about tonight's Rangers game. Really, and I'm going to put this in my Flyers notebook, the next one, which should be up tonight, Sunday. It should be up tomorrow. If not, it'll be up Tuesday. But really, the loss of Sean Couturier really hurts this team. It hurts them penalty kill. It hurts them in terms of size down the middle, center, particularly the defensive end. Some of the other guys have done all right filling in, but they really miss Sean Couturier, and they miss him all over the ice. They miss him in faceoffs. He's not the greatest faceoff guy in the world, but certainly down in his own zone in that left faceoff circle, he helps. They miss him certainly on defense, where he does a terrific job, and they really miss him on the penalty kill. Both the Devils' goals were power play goals. I can't tell you Sean Couturier is the difference in all of that, but as I said, I think it was last week's show, or maybe it was the week before. I think it was last week, though. I said, you know, if every 10 power plays the Flyers give up an extra goal, that's a lot. I mean, that makes a big difference, especially for a team like the Flyers, who have played more overtime games. So more of their games have gone to overtime than any team in the league. At least last time I looked, they were number one. They might be tied now. But I think the Devils' game was the 20th time that they've gone beyond regulation this season. And, you know, one goal one way or the other makes a big difference, either not getting to overtime or even whether they get there or not. And Sean Couturier plays a big role for this team, and I'm just afraid with him out for 4 weeks, that's going to be a tough injury to overcome. Michael Delzato, I should point out, also out with a left wrist injury, and expected to miss weeks, according to general manager Ron Hextall. Michael Delzato will not be in the lineup tonight against his former team, the New York Rangers. And as I pointed out last week, and there's a video on PhillyFanatics.com, Wayne Simmonds was involved with Ryan McDonagh, the captain of the Rangers. Wayne Simmonds was going to check McDonagh, and McDonagh hit him with a cross check in the head that was vicious. And Simmonds turned around, gave him a little slash. McDonagh honestly should have dropped the gloves. That's the honest hockey player would do after you cross check somebody in the head like that. It may turn around, but he did not. And Simmonds threw a left hand that didn't look like much, but must have caught McDonagh right on the button because he did miss some games with concussion protocol. He wasn't acting. He dropped to the ground. And Wayne Simmonds got a match penalty, which was absolutely ridiculous. That type of little punch we see all the time in the NHL. Maybe give him a double minor for roughing, something like that. No way he should have got a match penalty. But anyway, the Rangers have been talking about revenge. And Tanner Glass has been mouthing off. And I expect to play Flyers-Rangers games. You're going to see some people challenge Wayne Simmonds. Now, if there's a fight right off the bat, by the way, McDonagh skated on Friday. I don't know if he's going to play tonight or not. But I expect to see some fireworks tonight. And Wayne Simmonds, I hope the Rangers challenge him to a fight and take him head on, that we don't see the cheap shot sticks to the head. And I also hope the Rangers don't go taking shots at Claude Giroux, which is something, you know, they might say, hey, you hit our captain, we'll take out your captain. Of course, the difference is McDonagh started this whole thing with a cross check to the head. And I should point out, Simmonds also got a butt end to the face earlier in that game that was not called. I'm getting a little upset. I saw yesterday one of the Devils spear Shane Gostisbehere in the midsection, possibly the groin area, dropped him to the ground. There was no call. I'd like to see that film get sent to the NHL and see somebody suspended off of that. That was brutal. But anyway, expect to see some fights tonight, I would guess, and with involving Wayne Simmonds at some point with the Flyers. And like I said, I hope that that's what it is. I hope that we don't see the dirty stick work from the Rangers or shots at Giroux or Voracek or anything like that. Although, mess with Voracek, you might get surprised. He in his few fights, he's been pretty wild and pretty good. But like I said, should be a battle at Madison Square Garden tonight. Really a contentious game. I think you're going to see very high spirits. I think you'll see a lot of anger. And, hey, makes for good entertainment sometimes. But the Flyers, most importantly, need to win the game. They need those points. They can't lose sight of that. They can't get caught up in the fighting and all the back and forth and forget about the game. They can't take their eye off the 2 points that they need, which would be a big 2 points for them. Time for my final thoughts, since I'm the only one doing it. My final thought has to do with college basketball. Big games is coming up Wednesday. Temple had a win today against South Florida. I believe that's 5 in a row for Temple. They're 16-8. Wednesday, they play number one ranked Villanova. They need to win that game to get into the tournament. I really think they're in first place, and I guess they could win their conference tournament, but it would be a huge, huge step for Temple to beat Villanova. Also, St. Joe's, which has 22 wins, is playing Dayton, number 19 Dayton. St. Joe's needs a signature win. That could be it. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Thank you for listening. I am Eric Fisher. Check out the site, and we'll talk to you next week.